Welcome to the Chef Leadership Academy Lecture Series, a series of presentations delivered by Professor Jagdish Sheth, author of classic business books such as The 4 A's of Marketing and The Self-Destructive Habits of Good Companies. This lecture is on what is customer centricity.
This lecture is on customer centricity. As you know, it is the holy grail of marketing. In fact, more companies have tried to be customer-centric and have failed in the process. But before we talk about how to organize around customer centricity, I would like to define what it is. So this lecture is all about what does it mean to be customer-centric organization and what does it mean to be customer-centric marketing. So let's start the journey. It is a very natural progression. If you look at the life cycle of successful companies, in the early stages, they are all, and they should be, product-driven. In other words, whatever offering they are making in the marketplace, whether it's patent-based product or a trademark secret formula product, or it is even a service that we offer, or bundle of services that somebody in the intermediary can organize and do it. Doesn't matter, whatever it is, you have to be product-centric, actually. Customer needs are already understood. There is a market, there is a demand. It's all about how do you organize and operationally deliver the product offering at a value that the customers like. So product-centric organization is very important in the early stages of the evolution of a company. There, you organize around product each of the functions. The function of making it, function of procuring it, function of storing it, function of distributing, function of shipping, function of collecting payments, whatever it is. But as a product gets more and more commoditized, or other companies imitate the product of the pioneering company, or the idea even, then you begin to say, how do I slow down competition by differentiating myself not as much on the product features, functions, ingredients, but more, in fact, on segmentation? So companies usually then tend to segment the market. If I have this one target segment who is liking my product, is loyal to my product, how do I offer it to another segment? I mean, this is a classic case of Model T by Henry Ford, which was a product-centric, very successful company. And when everybody wanted to question Henry Ford, why don't you offer at least colors of your Model T, which came only in black? His standard answer was, customers can have all the choice of colors so long as it is black. And he was right, contrary to all the criticism we make, because what was necessary was to build a product of good quality at affordable prices by having functional specialization and in the process actually in fact deliver value. On the other hand, once the automobile industry became a norm, a success, and people began to switch from horses and buggies to basically motorized buggies, General Motors came out with the idea of segmentation. Chevrolet for the working class people, Buick and Pontiac, for example, Oldsmobile for the upper socioeconomic classes, and Cadillac for the very wealthy classes. And it makes sense. As it is done in the IT services industry, as it is done in consultancy services, in fact, most of the professional services tend to eventually organize around segments. After segmentation, which is a disaggregation of the mass market into segments, the next evolution is to focus on individual customers, individual accounts. This is very common in business-to-business marketing by definition, because you have a handful of customers, and especially if you are an OEM supplier, where the customer may be only 3-5 automobile companies if you are a component maker, or the customer may be just one customer if you are a defense supplier, a defense company such as a Rockwell, for example, at one time, Northrop Grumman, Lockheed, or Boeing. But customer-centric and customer-centricity is becoming commonplace even in the consumer mass market, primarily because we are becoming more and more a services-driven economy where you have a direct relationship between the producer or the supplier and the consumer or the user, for example. What is the strategic advantage of customer-centricity? In the next chart, as you can see, if you plot the revenues not by product, not by segments, but by accounts, and you plot it not just randomly or a normal distribution of some sort, but from the highest paying customers to the lowest paying customers, you always see a curve that comes down, which is technically called Pareto's law, or in marketing what we call 20-80 ratio. 20% of your customers concentrate 80% of their revenue. We all know this stuff. Every salesperson understands that. But if you plot on the same chart, your cost curve, how much does it cost to serve the customer? And I'm talking about primarily X factory costs, which means all marketing costs, branding costs, selling costs, as well as customer support costs. That curve is very different. Usually it is slightly downward sloping, but on the left side is a group of accounts where you are having very high margin, high profitability, cost of serving is low, revenues are high because of economies of scale of marketing. And as you go to the right side on the chart, you find on the other hand, you are losing money. The cost is higher than the revenue per account that you are getting, for example. So revenue 20-80 ratio is even more concentrated, like 10-90, when you do account by account profitability. So in segmentation, we reduce that kind of an aggregate subsidies that arises across the market from the mass market. Now we are able to disaggregate even further at the individual account level, and that gives you enormous insight where to invest your marketing dollars in the future and where to divest your marketing dollars. By the way, while this is a normative chart, this is how the world should look like. Often in the actual data, in the business-to-business market, you find your top 5-7 customers are not your most profitable customers. Profitable customers are emerging after that, and then back again, the profitability declines. And that is primarily because very large accounts or customers have the negotiating power, and usually the supplier company, salespeople surrender the margins. But technically, if you have economies of scale phenomenon, the curve should look like what I'm showing in the diagram. So let's first of all understand who is a customer. Lots of definitions are there. I believe a customer has three different roles. A customer is a user, a customer is a payer, and a customer is a buyer or a selector, a choice maker. Each role seeks a different value from the same offering. Users want performance value, payers want price value, and buyers want service value. Therefore, if you offer a superior product at lower than competition prices in a customer-friendly market manner, you will always win the customer's heart, his wallet, his mind, everything. In other words, marketing is actually not a rocket science. The world of customer behavior is very predictable. Only question is going to be, can you make money at the same time? And companies have shown that if you work backwards from a customer perspective of offering a superior product at lower than competition prices in a customer-friendly manner, how do you then organize yourself? How do you procure your components, raw materials? How do you create value so that you are profitable? In fact, the Japanese have a practice called target costing. And that's what we are all learning how to do it by working backwards. It is not cost plus pricing, but it is price minus costing as a way of thinking about it. The three roles of a customer, a user, a payer, and a buyer, are usually distinctly separate in business-to-business markets, especially among the Fortune 500 large companies, because each function is managed by a different department. So users are the engineers and the factory people, the buyers are the procurement department, and the payer is the finance department or accounts payable department by and large. But they are often blurred in small to medium enterprises, owner-managed small businesses. To me, I have always felt that owner-managed small businesses are more like super residential customers. So if you plot business customers to residential or consumer customers, the small medium enterprises, especially owner-managed, lean more like, and they behave more like, in fact, super residential customers. Role separation and specialization as a buyer, user, payer may happen in small and medium enterprises, especially when the buyer is separated from the payer and the user, which means owner has delegated the procurement of daily things like, for example, office supplies to the business manager or a business administrator. So let's talk about how do you become a customer's choice. You become the customer's choice by exceeding customer expectations better than competition, especially about value for the money and the customer service and the way you offer it. So it is what you offer and how you offer. Customer satisfaction, which is a core foundation of marketing, is partly psychological and partly real. Expectations are all psychological, experiences are all real. Unfortunately, expectations have a very large variance. In other words, one customer's expectations are so different than other customers' expectations. And therefore, we need to understand often how to reduce the variance or how to manage customer expectations, not just exceed customer expectations. And that's a whole new presentation altogether about shaping customer expectations as opposed to exceeding customer expectations. But we have found over time that as we increase customer satisfaction through all of the studies, all of the investment in processes like the quality process, for example, the procurement process, the delivery process, however you think about it, think about the Amazon and the way they deliver your books, for example, as opposed to the traditional way we delivered. Think about the 24/7 grocery stores open anytime, any place you want to buy your daily necessities, all those things we have done. And in hotel motel business or hospitality business, we even now turn down the pillow, you know, and all the stuff we do pretty much. But the more we satisfy the customer, unfortunately, customer expectations rise. You know, I used to travel a lot, and I was quite happy at one time if I just got a clean bed, and my reservation was pretty much actually delivered. But today, if I don't have a turned down bed and 2 mints on my pillow, I'm unhappy. Think about that. So customer satisfaction actually has consequences after the satisfaction that we need to understand. Meeting customer expectations of the most demanding customers. This is something every marketer wants to avoid because demanding customers are annoying. Demanding customers may be cost causers. Demanding customers can create unhappiness among employees, all this stuff. But it says that the more demanding the customer, and if you can achieve to that level of excellence, then you probably have no competition. You differentiate very well. This is very much like what we call tough love. You know, parents can love you, but if they don't provide a discipline and the values, it's not good for you either. So it's a tough love approach to managing customers. As I said, I will not talk about managing customer expectations, which will be a separate lecture we will have one of these days, but this is the basic notion that to become customer's choice, you must exceed their expectations better than competition. I want to now talk about marketing. As you know, we have three different disciplines within marketing, and we somehow blur the boundary by calling them marketing. You have traditional marketing, which is basically product design, innovation, packaging, branding, all that stuff. Maybe segmentation, targeting, positioning, that's all part of what is called marketing. But you also have a selling, and we confuse selling with marketing quite a lot. And then you have after sale customer support or customer service, as it is called. And we often can confuse whether it's marketing or not, actually, right? Selling and marketing are always confused. In fact, if you take any mass media and you watch television, or any news, they often blame it was a marketing problem when it was a selling problem. So I've tried to define these three different functions by a framework, which is a customer-oriented framework. To me, marketing is all about anticipating future customer expectations. It is not what customer needs, wants today, but what customer is likely to want, need tomorrow. That means understanding the future. So marketing has to be primarily future-oriented thinking. And then positioning the company, its offerings, its pricing, its packaging toward where the customers will be. This is very much like Wayne Gretzky in ice skating. He is the person who has scored more goals than anybody at a very young age. And people always used to ask, what is the skill set? How can you be such a good ice skater or ice hockey, the game they play? And his answer was that I do not skate to where the puck is, but I skate to where the puck will be. So the role of marketing is to steer the organization toward where the customers are going for whatever reason. Could be the demographic changes, which is a massive change we all know experience in advanced countries, or emerging markets where they're all aspiring and becoming growth-oriented. They all want to buy branded goods as opposed to make it at home, for example. Or the impact of technology on customers. I mean, customers are now so used to technology, whatever the reason is. So marketing is all about anticipating future customer expectations. So what's selling? Selling is all about shaping current customers' expectations. Remember, we talked about part of the marketing is shaping customer expectations, managing customer expectations, which is what salespeople do. Customers have expectations about delivery, about, you know, whatever it is, price, you negotiate. You shape the customers, as we have seen any salesperson trying to sell you things, whether it's all over the telephone or whether, in fact, it's in personal selling, like financial wealth managers, where they try to sell the banking services, the retail stores, any way you think it. What is customer service? Customer service is all about exceeding customer expectations, which means, are you responsive? Are you able to solve customers' problem after buying the product, for example? And can you provide assistance during any kind of a crisis or emergency, such as when you have a major superstorm, for example, an earthquake, for example, or a disaster of some sort? What we need to know or understand is how to integrate the three different competencies into an integrated framework. And customer seems to be the one around which one can integrate it. So marketing, selling, and customer service are all value creation activities by companies. However, to get more efficiency and effectiveness, they need to be aligned and integrated, which is where often the misalignment or a turf wars quite often does not get you all of the power of marketing. The best way to integrate these three different activities and functions, something that is pre-selling, which is all marketing, something that is selling, something that is post-selling, which is all customer service, is to integrate around customers or around accounts by identifying specific roles, responsibilities, resources, and metrics, the way you measure them, which each marketing function is evaluated on those four or five criteria in the way they deliver value to the customers. So on the next chart, I'll try to break down specific activities. Marketing's job primarily is to create the offering, the product, the service, more acceptable, more affordable, more accessible. The three A's of marketing. In fact, Coca-Cola was founded just on those three as the mission of marketing. So marketing mission is to enhance companies' acceptability in the marketplace. And there are two dimensions. Functional acceptability, which means actually you can engineer that into the product, whether it's a recipe, whether it's a mechanical product, whether it's an electronic device like an iPad or a telephone, whatever it is. Or you can create value psychologically. In other words, consumers relate to the products beyond just its function. Quite often they are emotionally attached to the product. Fanatic loyalty arises, such as for iPhone, for example, or Apple in general. There's a cult behavior, such as Harley Davidson, for example, and that one can be done by marketing through packaging and positioning. Affordability is the second thing marketing can do, and that is ability to pay, which we have not done as good a job, which means how do you create a low price phenomenon, as China has delivered great value by producing good quality products at very low prices. It's unbelievable, but quite often. And as America did 100 years ago, when we made Model T so affordable in automobiles, Timex watches so affordable, Kodak camera so affordable that Europeans could not even compete against the Americans. Same thing has happened with the Japanese. Now it is happening with the Chinese. So how do you produce low-priced products and still make money? Or you finance it to enhance the ability to pay, which again, in the US, we have done a wonderful job by creating a credit institution, borrowing power. Of course, the credit cards now. Before the credit cards, you had the department store cards. Sears had the largest credit card operations at one time, with 50 million households all having a Sears credit or a Sears finance. And of course, before that one, we had housing finance. We created savings and loan institutions to support buying of a home, which is the largest investment one makes. Just goes on and on. Insurance companies do the same thing by having premiums paid over time and therefore make it affordable. Leasing. I mean, just can go on. You can think about the way companies have innovated to make ability to pay managed by marketing offerings. Similarly, willingness to pay, which we do quite well. Motivating people to pay by differentiating the product, as Apple has again done very well now, as other companies have done in the past, or offering something that is unique. Third one is accessibility, which means availability, which is location, 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 which today with the mobile tracking technologies and the mapping and location-based services, this is becoming very key. And of course, convenience, easy to do business with, 24/7, guarantee, if not satisfied, you can return the product. And all those things that we do is basically accessibility dimension. What about selling? The biggest role of selling, whether selling is advertising, personal personal selling or promoting in any way, publicity, public relations, however you do it, is increasing the awareness in the marketplace. And quite often, great products have low awareness. And awareness means brand awareness, or awareness means product awareness, either one of the two. So you can increase product awareness, you can increase brand awareness. That's the role of this sales organization or selling mission. The second equally important role of selling is educating the market. Market needs to be educated quite often, especially in industries where the competency by the consumers is just not there, such as in healthcare, for example, or surprisingly in financial services. So you can have a product education, you can have a brand education. Again, two dimensions there. So how does the brand function? How do you use the brand? How do you use the product? Many recipe, you know, oriented, like, you know, Pillsbury products, for example, like Bisquick. Well, how do you make things out of that one? It's all know-how, it's all skill set that you can educate. And a third thing the selling organization must do, and they do, is motivate people to buy. But these are three kinds of motivations. One is there's an economic motivation, so you can use economic rational thinking, social motivation to buy, or an emotional motivation to buy. Once a salesperson understands which motivation works, or a combination, you make your sales effort accordingly. What I find most important is that the best selling, more enduring selling, is a purpose-driven selling. In other words, what is the purpose? What is the meaning of that consumption by the consumer above and beyond satisfying their functional, social, and emotional needs? Are we serving the society at large in our consumption? Are we contributing back to the society? And if that can be integrated into the selling function, you will always make a sale. The third area of marketing, of course, is customer support, customer service, and it has several components. The first one is responsiveness, and the responsiveness can be implemented by having expertise, because that's how you are the expert, like a technician for an automobile, for example, or a doctor, for example. How can you help in emergency disaster recovery? And having a caring attitude. The most important thing customer support organization has to have is caring, compassionate attitude. So do you have the empathy and a listening skill that becomes very important in the customer service organization? Second one, and my favorite, is that after consumers buy products, they are still not so sure. They want to rationalize they made the right choice. Somebody has to reinforce that. They talk to their friends to get a support for the decision, such as, for example, I'm engaged. And you talk about that one because you want to have everybody say you made the right decision. I bought a new car. I bought a new house. People talk about mundane products even today. Among friends, social media, marketer can do a good job reinforcing after the sale. Unfortunately, in marketing, we spend more dollars in pre-sale and sell and not enough in post-sales. It's called after marketing. So one can reinforce it, especially for high ticket purchases or places where consumers lack expertise and they've gone on some sort of a unknown trust factor, and they would like therefore to be reassured that the decision they made was the right decision. A third way customer service organization can add value is value-added offerings, which means after the purchase, customer has to do things with the product. Business to business, it's very obvious. You have to do maintenance, you have to install, but it is true in consumer markets, such as in appliances, for example. Even in grocery products, what I buy from the store, I have to still open the package, I have to still undo it, I have to add some ingredients before I can serve the family. So you have enormous set of value-added offerings you can make, such as free delivery, free installation, maintenance. All those are value-added offerings, which is a part of customer support organization. And the last one is that I think it is really the role of customer service organization, not the sales organization, for retention and loyalty. Salespeople by their nature will be more like hunters. They want to make a sale and move on to make a next sale. They don't tend to generally nurture relationship with the same customer after the sale. So that job has to be taken over by somebody in the marketing. As I said, if you define marketing as pre-selling, selling is selling, and then post-selling is all customer support, a retention responsibility and retention opportunity arises a lot more with the customer service organization than with the customer selling organization. And of course, that means loyalty programs and managing those programs, like frequent flyer programs or future commitments, basically making, such as offering coupons, offering offering points. And my favorite is SNH Green Stamps. 40, 50 years ago, that was the first premium coupon offering where they gave you stamps for grocery products. You licked the stamps and pasted into pages. And do you know it was a family get-together? Children got involved, mom got involved, father got involved, and they redeemed to the grocery store the whole book. I still remember that. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Today, we do the same thing electronically, essentially. So let me conclude. Most companies evolve over time from product to segment to customer center. Marketing. A customer is a user, a payer, and a buyer. Each one seeks a different value. User is looking for performance value, payer is looking for a price value, and a buyer is looking for a service value or a purchase value, convenience value, delivery, when can you make it, how can I get it, etc. So if you offer a superior product at a lower price in a customer-friendly manner, you will always win the business. As I talked about, there are two sides to customer perspective. Customer expectations and customer experiences. We are focused too much on exceeding customer expectations and not enough on managing customer expectations. And I will probably have a separate lecture on how to manage customer or how to shape customer expectations. Customer-centric marketing is an integral approach with which to redefine functions and roles of marketing, which is pre-selling, selling sales organization, and post-selling customer support. And if one can organize around customers, we will get a lot more efficiency and effectiveness out of this great resource called marketing. The mission of marketing, therefore, is to anticipate future customer expectations, however they are shaped. They may be shaped by public policy, they may be shaped by technology, they may be shaped by just demographic changes, and make companies' offerings in the future more acceptable, more affordable, more accessible than what is done today. The mission of selling is to enhance customers' awareness of companies' offerings and to educate and motivate them to buy now. And the best reason to sell is building a purpose in that consumption so the consumer buys more than economic reasons, social reasons, or emotional reasons. There's a higher meaning in life. It's like a meaningful consumption, meaningful purchase, meaningful marketing. And mission of the customer service is to be responsive, especially in emergency crisis situation, as well as to reinforce existing behavior constantly. Such a simple thing to do, calling up the customer after purchase to say, is everything is okay? 95% of the times, it'll be fine. But getting that call, personalizing to say, here is my number, you can call me, here is my name, is all very reinforcing. Even talking to say, let me just analyze for you, you made the right decision on this attribute, you did very, very well compared to competition, you made the right choice, just psychological reinforcement. We call it cognitive dissonance theory or rationalization that takes place after decision. I think it's the role of the customer service. And ultimately, I believe it is not the selling organization or the marketing organization, but it's the customer support organization who should be measured, given the responsibility, the training for customer retention, as well as customer loyalty in the future. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this lecture, What is Customer Centricity? With Professor Jagdish Sheth. For more about Professor Sheth and the Sheth Leadership Academy, visit www.shethleadershipacademy.com.